Hello and welcome to East Meets West. I'm Olga Bataman. And as you see, Taro is not joining us in the studio today, and we've even picked a smaller table so that I don't feel that lonely without her while Taro is across the ocean, but always with us. Hi, dear, where are you?
Oh, hello. Well, I'm all the way across the pond, across the Pacific Ocean in on the west coast of the United States of America. So it's nice to see you, and I miss you.
Miss you too.
Everyone.
It's been quite a while since you visited the United States last time. How do you find it there now?
Well, you know, it was really a culture shock because when I flew in, I could see things into a major, I flew into a major city, and things have really changed. They're more run down. Infrastructure's different. Things are more expensive. Gasoline is $6 or more per gallon on the West Coast.
Oh,
wow. I think on the East Coast, it's like $5 or $4, which is double the price last year.
Mm-hmm.
A sandwich is like $20.
What?
$18. Yeah, at a grocery store, like a deli sandwich,
$18. Oh, wow.
In some places, $8, you know, in others. It's just, I don't know how people are getting by. I was at a bookstore and I talked to the people mm-hmm. working there, and one of them started describing their life, trying to work just at bookstore salary, which is minimum wage. And they almost teared up. They said, we have to borrow money to pay rent and to get by. And rent is $1,000 on average more a month. All over the country. And yeah, inflation went up in Biden's administration, and now with Trump, with this, you know, what's going on with Iran and everything else.
Ah, so do you think this is the consequences of the oil prices going up? So what's the reason behind that?
I think it's the consequences of greed by the elites in America politically, yes. And I think the endless wars. It's taking a toll, because when a country doesn't invest in their infrastructure, in their working class, you have, you know, you get to the point where people are just surviving. So the poverty rate, I found out while I was here, is the highest it's ever been in history.
Oh, wow.
You have people that normally wouldn't be at a food bank literally trying to get food. It's really shocking. And you can, you know, I think that it's just the endless wars. And, you know, Donald Trump made a promise not to continue the endless wars, and he broke that promise. And so the American people are angry, and you can hear it. Like when last time I was here, I didn't hear as much political talk, but like everywhere you go, people are talking about how upset they are.
Yeah, because it's like
it's
anything
palpable.
But make America great again, it seems. It's like the opposite happening.
Mm-hmm.
That's the problem.
Yeah, like even when you go to the beaches, like the infrastructure of like the steps going on, the roads, everything's kind of crumbling.
Mm.
The bridges, things just look shabby. And, you know, I also, you know, Moscow is so sophisticated with its the way you get delivery.
You just got used to it. Yeah, you just got used to it.
I got very used to it. And I feel like almost like here we are in the heart of the tech industry in the United States, but yet it feels backwards compared to like Moscow and St. Petersburg and Sochi. So it's interesting. My daughter.
So now coming from Russia, you like feel this contrast that probably you hadn't been noticing before, right?
Yeah, people don't look as healthy. They're not as well dressed because things are so expensive. You really see the difference. I mean, New York is New York always, and Miami and those kinds of cities. So you have the upper class. But like, I'm in a rural part of the Western United States, and people are really hurting and they're really struggling. They're struggling to put food on the table, literally.
You know, I remember I was so disillusioned when I visited New York for the first time. You know, for me, New York was something, you know, everyone was striving for. And then when I came there for the first time, I was so much disappointed. You cannot imagine, you know, the metro, just think of metro. in Moscow, it looks like a museum, you know, sometimes of contemporary art, you know, sometimes of classic art. But in New York, it's like, you know, there were drug addicts, some were almost vomiting, you know, the rats. It was literally disgusting. And I was so much disappointed, you know, that Metro can look this way.
It's really sad. Like on the West Coast, there's places that if you're driving and you're at a stoplight, you could be carjacked. So you have to be very careful. Like what I'm finding is even in the rural places, I don't put my phone down. I'm very careful where my things are. You can be have things stolen or have pickpockets. It happens very quick. And that's happening in European states as well. But again, this happens when people are desperate. When the economies become desperate, you see a lot more crime, petty crime and things like that. But, you know, I mean, the cities in Russia, I had just posted online, Olga, how beautiful Moscow is in other cities like St. Petersburg and Sochi and Vladivostok.
But and, I just came you were back just from recently yeah. there. Yeah, I just came back from the Eastern Economic Forum that is annually held in Vladivostok. And Vladivostok, I mean, it's so far from Moscow, 7,000 kilometers, but it's so beautiful. It's so stunningly beautiful, I have to say. So I also tried, you know, to post on X to give our viewers some perspective, some glimpse at least, you know, of how diverse Russia is, how vast our territory is, and, you know, how beautiful it is in different parts of the country. So, but how do they portray Russia in American media?
Mm-hmm. So basically the Russian media, American media, Western media, is portraying Russia as desperate right now and that Vladimir Putin is getting pressure to end the war. But in actuality, it's the opposite. At least that's my take on it. You see these trips that the delegations are making. I think Trump is desperate for a win, you know, and to save face. He's also caught in a quagmire with Iran. So I think that, you know, the portrayal of the Western media is always trying to save face for the United States and for Europe, NATO, and you know, there you have it. But reality is reality. But, you know, who can talk more to this is actually Jimmy Dore, who is with us today. He's a comedian. He has his own podcast that's highly successful. Years ago in 2020, they tried to cancel Jimmy Dore when he spoke about the corruption regarding COVID and about the proxy war. I had the honor of meeting him at one of the rallies, you know, Rage Against the War Machine. And when we were speaking out against the proxy war that the U.S. and NATO was fighting against Russia via Ukraine. And it's really just such a pleasure to know him. And he also spoke at the U.N. Security Council. So it's really an honor to have Jimmy with us. Welcome, Jimmy Dore.
Hi, great to see you, Tara.
Thank you for joining us on East Meets West, Jimmy.
Okay, my pleasure.
Probably let's start with the biggest news, which is Trump's new hair color. Of course, I'm kidding. I mean, it's here in Russia, we're mostly focused on the negotiations that have been resumed. And I guess it's for the seventh or eighth time when Witkoff and Kushner are visiting Russia, flying all the way to Russia. And just before we're filming the show, Trump had his phone conversation with President Putin. So what do you make of it? What do you think of it? Are you optimistic, pessimistic?
I'm pessimistic because Zelensky just made a pronouncement that he's threatening to shoot down commercial airliners over Russia right now. Yeah, I don't know if you heard
planes.
That.
Civil planes, of course. Mm-hmm.
Yes. So that's, you know, he's just, so those are war crimes. Those are, that's called desperation. That's what that is called. And if he's being told to do that and make that statement by the CIA, that's even worse. So I'm guessing the CIA is telling him to say that. And, you know, the CIA are maniacs. And so that's what this whole war was engineered by the CIA. The coup, it was engineered by them, the bombing of the Donbass, and the ramp up to this, the invasion by Putin was all, this was a decade long, if not longer, plan by the United States and the CIA. And the bigger problem is not the CIA. I think the bigger problem is now Europe. So Europe has got, I don't know, $90 billion set aside for this war. And there is going to be, it seems like they're set on having a bloodbath and a real nuclear confrontation with Vladimir Putin and Russia. And again, the people don't want this. The people of the United States don't want it. The people of Europe don't want it. And that's the war, the beat of war for in Europe. I don't understand. I don't know where that's, except to say that the same people who control the United States government are the same people who control the European government. And it's the it's the military industrial complex, as Julian Assange said, the international security apparatus. And the war didn't go the way they thought it would. They thought they would be able to balkanize Russia, split it up, and that they'd be able to gin up a color revolution and overthrow Vladimir Putin. That didn't happen. He was much stronger. And now Russia is even stronger than before the war and closer to China. And now BRICS is happening. So there are power centers developing around the world, economic power centers, which is also bad for the United States because the thing that props up our economy and gives us the ability to have 1,000 military bases around the world is the fact that our dollar is the reserve currency of the world, which is going away. And the Iran war is just hastening that effect. And Scott Bessent trying to be an economic hitman and put secondary sanctions on countries that still trade with Iran is just going to, again, hasten the effect of getting rid of the American dollar as the reserve currency of the world. So this is a disaster for Europe. It's a disaster for the United States. And it's the biggest disaster by far for the Ukrainian people. And, they're trying to draft 50-year-olds and 60-year-olds now. They're thinking about drafting women into the military. And so, so obviously Zelensky is a 100% puppet. CIA is running this. And the bigger problem is probably, I mean, and Trump is, from credible reports of people who know on the inside, his dementia is racing now. It's getting much worse. Yes, it's progressing. And so he's not rational right now. And so the most rational thing that he should do is tell Zelensky to say the war's all over and that's that. And we're pulling out our funding. Same thing he should do in Iran is declare victory and say it's over and go home. Of course, he's not going to do either of those things. So it doesn't look good. Prognosis not good.
But, Jimmy, if I may ask you, it seems that Russia is actually, I mean, Russia is advancing on the front line, right? Ukraine is almost blocked economically from the trade in the Black Sea. As you've said, they're mobilizing 60 years old and are discussing mobilizing women. So, and Zelensky seems desperate in his rhetoric. But it's like for the seventh or eighth time, you know, when they're flying across the ocean, they're sending their negotiators. This time they brought head of the sanctions department of the U.S. Treasury with them this time, Jin Lang. So it seems to me that United States definitely needed more than Russia does need this deal to be reached at this point of time. So, and even in this recent phone conversation with President Putin, President Trump showed his desire to reach the deal within his presidential term. So why is he putting this, I mean, pressure? Why does he need this deal to be signed?
Well, because he's fighting two wars at one time. We're out of missiles. The Jasmine, the Patriot missiles, the THAAD, they had to pull them out of Korea and around China because of the Iran war. And so they're out of ammunition. And the United States, the people don't want this war anymore. They've turned against it. The midterms are coming up. So if he can try to get maybe he's trying to get some kind of win before the midterms. I don't think it's going to happen. Again, I don't think this is going to happen because the CIA and Donald Trump in his previous term were at odds with each other. And so if he decides to end this war, the CIA won't let it happen, I don't think. Just like they didn't let it happen when Boris Yeltsin made his famous trip to Ukraine to make sure Zelensky didn't sign that peace deal. There was peace deals galore, but now it's, as predicted on my show and other places, when Russia first invaded Ukraine, that this is going to end on Russia's terms. And you're exactly right that Russia is less desperate than the United States. Also, there is certainly a big thirst to end this war inside Russia, but Putin knows that he has all the leverage right now, and he's not going to end it unless it ends on their terms. And so that's what's going to happen.
Even if we look in the, if we like check the, about the details about this potential new plan that the U.S. negotiators brought to the table this time, it's very much more plays in the hand of Russia, as for me, it seems, you know. First of all, it includes the non-alignment status, neutral status of Ukraine. Also, it says that Ukraine should withdraw its forces from, you know, the Donetsk and Lugansk Republic. So, I mean, with the buffer zone. So all of these points that are circulating in Ukrainian and like in all of the media, they play in Russia's hands. So this overturned window, as for me, it changes in Russia's direction. Don't you think so? Comparison to previous plans.
I mean, the best time for Zelensky and Ukraine to make a deal was before the war started. The second best time was right after it started, when they actually had a deal and all it needed was Zelensky's signature, and he didn't. And so, of course, yes, exactly. Just like I said, there is no other way to end this except on Russia's terms. And so, yeah, of course, the deal that Trump is offering is favorable to Russia because they don't have any leverage. There's no way to get out of this. They've lost this war. It was always a loser. The only variable now is if Europe wants to start a nuclear conflagration.
You had mentioned, Jimmy, in your earlier response about the midterms, and I wanted to just acknowledge that you've been sounding the alarm for a long time, and for a while you were one of the only people sounding the alarm, that both parties, the Republican and the Democrats, are actually kind of a uniparty, that the same donors are giving to both, that nothing changes, these endless wars. Could you expand on the meaning of all of this, these conflicts, Iran, and trying to rush to get the proxy war to end before the midterms? Will it matter who wins or loses the midterms, in your opinion?
It matters 0%. It's a good point. Yes. What's interesting, what's happening in the United States is that you're getting people, politicians like Abdul El Sayed, running for Senate, and he beat back AIPAC, the Israeli lobby, to win his primary. Mm-hmm. And he looks like he will probably be the next senator from Michigan. The irony is that him becoming the senator will probably give control of the Senate to the Democrats. The leader of the Democrats in the Senate is the biggest Zionist in the Senate, which is Chuck Schumer. The second biggest Zionist in the Congress is Humphreys, which is set, if the Democrats take over the Congress in the midterms, he will be the leader of the Democrats. He'll be the Speaker of the House in the Congress. Those are the two biggest Zionists. So, yeah, the irony is that voting for someone who's campaigning on a platform against Israel just actually strengthens their control. So there's no way to vote our way out of this in the United States. I've said this for years and years. There's no way to get no matter who you vote for, it's a vote for empire, that the people in the Congress and the presidency are not actually in control. They're actually middle managers, and that the capital sits above the military industrial complex. The deep state sits above the government, and they work for them. And so that there's nothing proves it more than people voting against Israel. And then it just enables Israel's control of our government even more. And so the same thing with Ukraine. There's a uniparty. It's run by the deep state. And our vote doesn't matter. I mean, that's not just hyperbole, by the way. We've known this is proven by a Princeton study going back to 2015 that it doesn't matter how people vote in the United States, that we're controlled by the interests of the top 10% of the rich in this country. And that's it. So the will of the people is, it never shows up in legislation in the United States. And they have brilliantly divide and conquer. So they have the Democrats and Republicans. We only have two parties in the United States, and they get it. So they get half the country fighting against the other half of the country. And as Michael Parenti taught us, the only thing that the oligarchs, the establishment, the military-industrial complex, the deep state, what the only thing they care about, they don't care if you have health care, they don't care if you have housing, they don't care if you have decent jobs or good infrastructure or clean streets. The only thing they care about is what you think. And what does that mean? Because if you think and you realize that your neighbor in the United States is suffering under the same oligarchy that you are, you're likely to join with them and to oppose the oligarchy, the establishment that's actually running things. But if they can keep you thinking that your enemy is your neighbor and that half the country is against the other half the country, then you'll keep fighting each other instead of coming together to fight the people who are actually inflicting the economic and pain and the wars, which nobody is for. So, but it works like a charm. So the Americans are just split as ever. And Trump is a gift to that, to that kind of divide and conquer strategy, because he's easy to demonize. And of course, the media in the United States is owned by the same people. They're to Zionist occupied media. It's a Zionist occupied government. It's a military industrial complex run government. It's a military industrial complex run media. And so there's no way to vote our way out of this. And the divide and conquer certainly has been winning. Americans still haven't woken up to the fact that their neighbor isn't their enemy, but that we have a shared enemy. That's the only way to get out of this. And it's not going to be by voting. It's going to have to be by workers rising up, shutting down capitalism, shutting down the machine, putting a hurt on the machine. And then you have to have a demand to that, right? So we have these things in the United States called No Kings protests. And you know that those are psyops by the deep state, because there's no demand to those protests. So they get millions of people out in the street to protest against Donald Trump acting like a dictator, but they don't ever have a demand to it. So that's how you know it's a psyop. Mm-hmm. So if we do have the workers rise up and we do shut down the machine, the demand has to be that we have to have public financed elections, and we have to pass a constitutional amendment saying money is not speech, because the Supreme Court has sided with the corporations and the moneyed interests, saying that money equals speech. Is that going to happen? I doubt that that will happen. I'm just telling people that's the only way out of this.
Jimmy, but not that long ago on our show, we had Tucker Carlson that you really know well, and he was expressing his willingness to create a third party. And you also spoke about that. Can you elaborate on that? I mean, are you discussing the details with Tucker? What can this party look like? Whom can it include? Will it help?
I haven't talked to Tucker about it, but I have talked to Marjorie Taylor Greene, Joe Kent, Thomas Massie. And, you know, the key, I'm all for it, by the way. I'm all for them starting. I would easily vote for Tucker Carlson as president, whether he would run or not, or whether they would allow him to, whether they would give him the Charlie Kirk treatment or the JFK treatment. It seems likely. But the idea of a third party, we have third parties in the United States, but both parties join together to kick them off the ballot and make their and they use the court system, which is also owned by the same people that own the politicians, to kick third parties off the ballot. So they would probably not allow them to be on the ballot. That'd be their first go. And the second idea is that if you do start a third party, I'm interested in the mechanism that they would use for funding, because if they would use the same funders as the Democrats and the Republicans, then they're going to run into the same problems. So that's the big question mark with the third party, which, by the way, I'm all for.
You know, you were also very vocal about COVID when nobody was. You were one of the brave voices, you and a handful of other people, that were really trying to expose the corruption of Dr. Fauci and the whole thing and just the psyop around it. And for that, you got canceled. And then you also spoke out against the proxy war that the U.S. engaged in against Russia via Ukraine and NATO. Are you experiencing that kind of pressure now, speaking out against Zionists and AIPAC, basically taking over a coup, basically, in Washington and kind of bragging about it, I mean, in my opinion. But, like, are you getting pressure the same way, or do you find that your show has just expanded and your platform has expanded because you've been able to bring this information to so many people?
Well, I mean, polling shows that the United States people have turned against Israel, right? I mean, the world has turned against Israel, and for a good reason. So, no, I'm not experiencing the kind of same kind of pressure when I was debunking Russiagate, which was, let's remember what Russiagate really was. Russiagate was a way to prime the pump and get Americans ready for the war in Ukraine, which they had in the chamber. So when Joe Biden pulled out of Afghanistan, people were patting him on the back for doing so. Look, he's ending the war. And what I said, well, we have to wait and find out what his plans are to do with the money we've been spending in Afghanistan is. Is he going to invest that back in the United States, which is what everybody wants? And of course, he wasn't. They had another war in the chamber. The war machine had the Ukraine war in the chamber. And so that's why he was allowed to end the Afghanistan war. In fact, he probably was ordered to do so because they wanted to hurry up and get to their war in Ukraine. No, I'm not feeling the same pressure because the people were brainwashed at the beginning of the Ukraine war. They were also brainwashed over COVID. And I think people now, Anthony Fauci goes in front of Congress and pleads the fifth, the science is pleading the fifth. So I think enough people have woken up to that, and enough people know people who have died from COVID, from not COVID, but from the vaccine. Mm-hmm. Or have been extremely injured by it. I'm one of them. I'm feeling less and less. But the big thing is nobody will ever admit. Nobody will ever say, hey, you know what? You were right about that Ukraine war. Hey, you were right about the proxy war in Ukraine. You were right about COVID. And by the way, you were right about October 7th being enabled by Israel and funded by Israel. I just saw a tweet today by Piers Morgan. He just woke up to the fact today that he said an amazing revelation because there's a news report in the Sunday Times that Benjamin Netanyahu in Israel allowed the October 7th attacks to happen. The last guy in the world to figure that out. So even he's figured it out is my point. And so, no, I'm not feeling the same pushback. The difference, but it doesn't really make a difference. Like I said, no matter how you vote in the United States, the grip of the military-industrial complex, the deep state, the oligarchs, and Israel is the titans on the throat of the American people.
Jamie, since you've mentioned Charlie Kirk assassination, and I mean, the more I follow it, the more weird it all looks for me. The investigation, the way the evidence was not even collected. I think it was destroyed. I mean, the attempt was to destroy the evidence, not to collect it. And I don't even know if someone still believes that he was a fanatic or something. So what do you think of all of this investigation about Charlie Kirk's assassination?
Well, as Joe Kent told me on my show, that he wanted to look in to see if there was any foreign involvement in the assassination. And he was stopped by the FBI, specifically Kash Patel, who's the head of the FBI. And then they did a media campaign through their mouthpieces saying that Joe Kent was lying. He doesn't have the ability to do that kind of investigation. And of course, they're just trying to trick people. They're trying to propagandize, brainwash people. Of course, that's the whole point of his office, the Center for Counterterrorism, is to coordinate all the information from all the intelligence communities and to see if there's any patterns or see if there's anything, pieces of the puzzle he can put together. And the FBI said, you're not going to have access to any of the information from our investigation, which, by the way, they're not doing an investigation. So there wasn't any information to get anyway. So there was government insiders helping this assassination. Likely that there was foreign involvement. Charlie Kirk, they said he could be the next president, and he had turned against the war machine, and he had turned against he could no longer support the Israeli cause. And that was it. They tried to bribe him one last time with a couple hundred million dollars. And when he turned it down, he said that night that they're going to kill me. And they did. He didn't say the left was going to kill me. He was on a Zoom call with Israelis, and he texted his friend, they're going to kill me. And so who do you think he was talking about? Wow. Do you think he was talking about purple-haired transgender people? Or do you think he was talking about the Israelis, the Mossad, and the United States war machine? That's what he was talking about. And they did it. And, of course, they're not only are they not investigating it, they're actively covering up the investigation. And it's the exact same playbook they did during COVID, is that you're not allowed to be skeptical of the government. You weren't allowed to be skeptical of the government during COVID. You weren't allowed to be skeptical of Big Pharma. And the same thing right now. You're not allowed to be skeptical of the FBI or the government or the establishment narrative. And if you are, you're called demonic. You're called all kinds of names. You're called you're demonized and tried to be discredited, which is exactly what they did to the leading doctors and journalists during COVID. It's the exact same playbook.
Exactly. I concur with you. And I only met Charlie Kirk twice. I was on his show, but he was very gracious and very thoughtful in his way of presenting about geopolitics. And it's really a travesty that he was murdered in such a way that now the truth is never going to really come out. Or I think it's trying to come out, but it's being blocked. I wanted to ask you a little bit about Trump because he seemed like such a Trojan horse. I had even written an op-ed saying, oh, well, Trump's saying he's against the forever wars. He's going to, take us somewhere else. You know, he's doing all these things. He's coming. And I kind of bought it hook, line, and sinker, but I don't think you did. You were always very kind of skeptical. So tell me what your thoughts are now about Trump, who kind of presented as he was going to end all these endless wars. And he's been very bellicose in his approach to diplomacy.
Well, Donald Trump had a track record in this. He was the first president in, I don't know, it seems like forever, that didn't start a new war in his first term. And mm-hmm. there were credible mm-hmm. reports that when he would order troops out of Syria, that the military would lie and tell him that they did and they didn't. And so so he had a bit of a track record and he had all the right enemies. They were trying to bankrupt him. They put all of the people around him in jail. They put his lawyers in jail. They put his top political advisor, Steve Bannon, in jail. And they were trying to put him in jail. And they tried to criminalize his political movement through a FBI psyop called January 6th, which we now know was a complete psyop. And now we know that the pipe bomber mm-hmm. from January 6th was a Capitol Police person. And that the FBI knew that, and now they're framing an autistic African-American kid for that, just like they're framing Tyler Robinson for the assassination of Charlie Kirk. So Donald Trump, that there wasn't any choice. Like, people act like, people who voted for Donald Trump were morons. Didn't you know he was a con man? Of course, every politician's a con man. We know Donald Trump's a con man. The problem was the other people were actively doing a proxy war and initiated a proxy war with the nuclear power. They were actively funding a genocide right in front of us. And Donald Trump said he wasn't going to do those things. So you had the choice of voting for that or voting for people who were currently doing it and were saying they weren't going to stop doing it. So it wasn't like you had a choice. It wasn't like the people who voted for Kamala Harris were geniuses because they were voting for the exact thing that they claimed to hate about Donald Trump. Well, it comes back to the Uniparty and the deep state and who actually controls the presidency. And it's not who you think. It's not the voters. Who controls the presidency is the deep state, is Capitol, is the international security state. That's who runs it. It's an oligarchy. It's not a democracy. And we haven't been a democracy for a long time.
Jimmy, but what do you think happened to Trump in between the terms, because he kind of switched, he was a whole different person in his first term.
Yes.
And then it all happened in the second term. So what happened in between suddenly?
I think what happened was they changed the laws in New York so they could prosecute him civilly, and they got a judgment. Then they prosecuted him over regular real estate deals, and I think the judgment was over $300 million, which they said was going to could bankrupt him. And so they did all those things, and they had four different felony cases going against them at the same time. Again, they had imprisoned his all of his lawyers. They imprisoned his top political advisor, and they were coming for him. And I think what happened was that he was given an offer. The offer was, if you play nice, we'll allow you to do all kinds of political scam, financial scams, which he's doing, right? So he's had over $1 billion in insider trading scams. He's done over 3,000 trades in 1 month. And, you know, he's doing it, manipulating the oil market, and he's making money off it, and his family. So I think what was given to him was an offer, hey, if you play ball, we'll allow you to enrich yourself to the tune of billions and billions and billions of dollars, not only you, but your family. And we're going to, we'll put, you know, we'll put Jared Kushner in charge of building Trump Towers in Gaza, and we'll all make billions of dollars, and we'll make sure that you're not in, you're not prosecuted for it and investigated it, because who controls the Congress, which is, of course, the Israeli lobby and the military industrial complex. And as we come up to the midterms, people are saying, well, don't you think that if the Democrats take over the House, they're going to have investigations into Trump's financial dealings and his crypto scams to the tunes of billions of dollars that he's been pulling off with the, and I'm like, no, because if they were going to do that, they'd be saying they were going to be doing that, and they would be talking about it as a campaign issue, and every time they went on television, they'd bring that up. If you want to see Donald Trump prosecuted for his financial crimes, you could vote for Democrats. Well, not one of them are running on that. Not one of them are talking about it, and so that leads me to believe that that was the deal, and they're never going to prosecute him. First of all, they're, you know, the reason why it took them so long to impeach Donald Trump in his first term was because they had to find a crime that they also weren't guilty of. And so the his first impeachment was because he delayed a shipment of weapons to Ukraine for the war. That was their first, that they finally found one thing that they weren't complicit in. So I think it's the same thing here. They're all complicit in these insider training deals. Nancy Pelosi is the famous. She's outperformed the market for the last 20 years, and everybody knows it. And so, yeah, they're. I think, to me, that's my theory. I think it's a sound theory because that's what's being played out right in front of our faces. And Donald Trump is a transactional guy. And so I don't think it was, it might have not been enough for them to try to imprison him or to scare him or to bankrupt him. But when they said, hey, we'll also sweeten a deal and let you become unbelievably wealthy and everybody around you and your family, and we'll allow you to manipulate the markets through a war with Iran, all you have to do is play ball. And I think he said, okay. And I think that's what happens. He's a transactional guy. I think that's what flipped him, and that's what got us to where we are.
Do you think that blackmailing with Epstein files has also something to do with that?
Oh, yeah, Hunter, of course. There's also that. And let's remember that the Epstein files that we know about is probably 1% of the Epstein files, right?
We just know about it.
So there's lots of other material that they've destroyed. We don't know about the videotapes. We only know about the emails from his one email that he used when he was on vacation. So there's all this. They never even searched his New Mexico ranch until all the stuff was destroyed and gone. And so he was given Epstein was given heads up after heads up about, hey, the FBI is coming to search your properties, get rid of anything that's incriminating. And he did. So this is just 1% of the stuff. And they won't even show us that. So the stuff that they will show us is completely blacked out and redacted. And then there's still half of that stuff that they won't even release, even though there's a law passed, one person voted against it, yeah. Clay Higgins, and Donald Trump signed it. So it was almost unanimously passed in Congress. Donald Trump signed it that they have to release and reveal what's inside the Epstein files. And they haven't followed the law. But of course, there's no one there to prosecute him, because in order to prosecute him, you would need an act of Congress or the Justice Department, which is also controlled by Zionists.
Right. And then you have the attorney general who's complicit with it. I wanted to ask you about, one final question here. I know you have to move on, but you mentioned earlier about nuclear or about possibility of World War III. Russia, I've lived there for 3 years, and I can honestly say Russia's not interested in that kind of catastrophic war. They're doing everything they can diplomatically. President Putin has shown immense restraint, in my opinion, as a world leader, even when civilian targets in Moscow and other regions have been attacked by NATO-backed weapons by Ukraine. What is your thought right now in the moment we're at, the precipice we're at, with World War III? You have Iran, you have Ukraine still going on. What is the end game? And are the Europeans going to take us there? Is the U.S. going to be effective in not taking us there? Or are they going to, you've heard Donald Trump even say he was going to bomb Iran and use nuclear weapons on Iran, which is in my opinion, he should have been, and in many people's opinion, he should have been impeached for saying that as a sitting president. But what are your thoughts on where we are in this moment and what's about to happen?
Well, I don't think there is an end game. Obviously, there isn't an end game. As Julian Assange taught us long ago, that these wars are not meant to be won. These wars are meant to be ongoing. And to transfer money from the tax base to the international security state, which is exactly what's happening. And so there is no end game right now in Iran. And there doesn't seem to be an end game in Ukraine. And so what the war in Iran has revealed to the world is that the United States military, which everyone feared, is now a paper tiger. We can't even win a war against Iran. Not only that, Iran has now been elevated through this war to be a superpower themselves, all right, and shown to be able to control the international flow of oil, which is all manufacturers need. So yeah, so what that means when people realize that the United States is a paper tiger, it then, well, why wouldn't China go in and do Taiwan? Why wouldn't they do that now? Why wouldn't Russia do whatever they want to do? There's nothing that the United States military can do. We can't fight these wars. We have a military that is for the 20th century, not for the 21st century. And we are the paper tiger. So will there be a nuclear? I think that's up to Europe. I think Europe, and it's up to the CIA. It seems like there's lots of people inside the deep state who would be happy with that, a nuclear confrontation. Whether that will happen, I don't know. People say that General Kane would stop Donald Trump if he tried to use nuclear weapons. I don't know if he has the power to do that, but we'll see. You're right. I've heard Tucker Carlson said he should have been removed just for floating that idea of using first strike nuclear war. And he, of course he should. That's crazy. He's not talking about using them as a response. He's talking about using them as a first strike, which is crazy. So, yeah, I agree with you. He is demented. There's no doubt that he's demented, and it is progressing rapidly.
Jimmy, if you would allow me to ask you probably the final question, if you have time for, can I please ask you about Europe specifically that you just mentioned, and about the success that AFD, Alternative for Germany, you know, this party had in local elections in Germany, and Merz's party was actually defeated. So people in Germany finally managed to show that, I mean, they need a party that would take care of the people, you know, not spending money on Ukraine, but spending money on what people actually need, you know, and it's happening in Germany right now. So do you think that people may change something in Europe and finally in the world as well?
Well, I mean, fingers crossed. I hope that can happen. I'm not an expert on Europe, but I do see what's happening when, you know, they're acting like the fascists that they pretend to be fighting, right? And now when there's an election outcome that they don't like, they declare the election fraudulent, and then they bar the person who won the election from running again, and then they get a puppet in. And so, I mean, I have hope. I don't have faith that the people of Germany will actually be able to take control of things and stop this war machine, because, you know, why would Germany allow the United States to blow up the Nord Stream pipeline? So then afterwards, they would have to spend two and three times higher price for energy. And Germany's the economic engine for Europe, and they just went along with it. And why would you go along with your own destruction? It's because they're controlled by, just like General Smedley Butler taught us, that a war is a racket, and the real reasons for war are only known to a handful of people, and those people get very rich off the war. And so I hope so. Can democracy win? I don't think so. You're not living in a democracy in Europe either. Hate to break it to you. And so we're being run by a deep state, and it's great to see that they did make some local gains. But again, the media is on board for the war in Europe. The media is on board for even conscription now in the UK. They're writing articles and saying conscript. It's the craziest thing. And, you know, fingers crossed. And if anybody, it's going to have to be the people rise up, and the people seem to be easily divided and conquered in the entire West.
Jimmy, I want to thank you for joining us. You've been very important as far as like content. Me personally, I've followed your show for a long time and followed your, I mean, I love your comedic, you know, your stand up as well. But more importantly, I love your geopolitical analysis, and it's content that I have followed for years, and you've brought some really good points to the audience. And I think that your show is proof that how hungry Westerners are for, or internationally, people are hungry for truth. And thank you for, you know, being a beacon out there and really saying things plainly. And so everyone understands. So thank you so much. And thanks for being on our show.
Yeah, thank you for revealing truth.
My pleasure. I appreciate it. Thanks for giving me the platform.
Thank you, Jimmy. And to our viewers, you see, we're trying to stay together, even being across the ocean with Tara. We'll keep on doing so.
And here I am in the West, so it truly is East meets West. Please follow us on social media and subscribe on YouTube. Stay with us. See you next time. Peace out.